Hi, my name is Steve Taylor, and I would like to welcome you to this presentation on data networking fundamentals. This presentation is intended as an adjunct to the data networking fundamentals background that Larry Hedick and I prepared. We'd also like to here right up front thank the sponsor of this, which is Nortel Networks, and we hope that you will visit their website when you have an opportunity. So our agenda for today actually has three parts. We'd like to talk to you a little bit about protocols and why protocols are so important in the data networking world. We'll talk a little bit about building a data network, and then we'll end up with some final considerations that you should be considering going forward. So, the fundamental question, what's a protocol? Basically, a protocol is a set of rules for determining how you send information between two peer devices, very much like you have diplomatic protocols in the world of affairs of state. And also, just like diplomatic protocols, you tend to work in layers. In fact, here, the little Russian dolls are an excellent example of how protocols are nested so that each of the individual tasks are defined and distributed among the various layers. Now, historically, these protocols have been defined for data networks by something called the OSI, or Open Systems Interconnect model. The good news about the OSI model is that it's a fantastic model of exactly what is done in which particular part of the protocol layer. The bad news, on the other hand, is that in reality, the OSI model is seldom followed today, and in particular, if you look at various functions that are performed within the network, you may find that one particular piece of equipment or one particular service or one particular process may today be basically smeared across three or even four of the layers that are traditionally defined in the OSI model. So for that reason, we're going to redefine the OSI model in terms of layer 1 through layer 7 based on how everything is actually used in common usage today. Now, we're also going to start basically from the top down. That is, instead of starting with layer 1, we're going to start with layer 7 because layer 7 is the part that you're really most interested in. Layer 7 is your information, your application data that you're interested in passing from one point to another. That application data could be a web page, or the information on a web page. It could be a picture, it could be an email, it could, for all practical purposes, even be a phone conversation. So, layer 7 is your application data. That's also the part that you're hearing lots about today in terms of layer 7 firewalls, layer 7 traffic management, etc. So layer 7 is where the real work is that you're trying to do. Now you might wonder why I jumped all the way from layer 7 to layer 4. The reason is layers 5 and 6 are very seldom discussed today so far as trying to make an analogy to the OSI model. So we're going to skip all the way down to layer 4, and layer 4 has, in general today, the most common protocols there that are going to go into the first of the nesting dolls, TCP and UDP. TCP stands for Transmission Control Protocol. UDP is User Datagram Protocol. Basically, what these are protocols that exist end-to-end. That is, they make sure that the information gets from one point to another. TCP is typically used with data because it provides for assured transmission. It's at the TCP layer that if you send something from one end to the other, you get back an acknowledgement that says, hey, this information actually made it there. UDP, User Datagram Protocol, does not necessarily have all of those different assurances built in. However, it tends to work better with things like packet voice. So basically, you have your application data going inside a TCP or a UDP packet of some sort. Next layer down is layer 3, the IP layer. In fact, you often hear TCP and IP used together, because indeed they do work together. You can't have just TCP without IP. IP likewise needs TCP, UDP, or something else to provide the end-to-end assurances. IP, also sometimes called Internet Protocol, is a connectionless way of addressing packets so that information can get from one point to another. Basically, what IP is a lot like is putting both an address and a return address on the front of a packet to make sure that all the routing information is appropriately stored. Even though we often talk about TCP/IP networking, in reality, TCP and IP still need another layer, sometimes called the link layer, that they can run over. It may be Ethernet. It may be frame relay in the wide area. It may be another protocol called PPP, which stands for point-to-point protocol. Doesn't matter so much what it is. The key is that you have to have yet another layer that basically is more down at the, just barely above the electronics of how you're getting from point A to point B. These are the layers that define things like how you are able to actually put together frames of information. And then finally, there's a physical layer. Layer 1, the physical layer, deals with everything from the transmission characteristics of a particular surface to, for instance, what the connector shape is. And on the connector, for all those little pins, what each of the little pins stand for. You have to have all of these layers, layer 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7, in order to actually get your information from one end to the other. And to me, it's just a marvelous way to think of it as being that each of these various protocols gets nested inside the dolls. Now let's talk in a little more specifics about some of the most typical data protocols you're going to be dealing with today. If you're putting together a network, the odds are very, 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 very good that you're going to be dealing with Ethernet. Ethernet is a protocol that's used in the local area network. That's what LAN stands for. Occasionally now, Ethernet also is used within a metropolitan area, in which case it's called Metro Ethernet. It says here, originally shared, now switched. Originally, Ethernet was a protocol that was typically a shared medium protocol. That is, everyone who was using the Ethernet was using the same high-speed medium, a fancy name for a piece of wire. And then there was a protocol in there that determined who could talk on that piece of wire at a time. Today, Ethernet tends to be switched, which acts a lot more like a phone call in that the information goes from one point to another, but it goes into a switch to have the information routed from one PC to another PC, from a PC to the Internet, for instance, rather than everyone using that same shared medium. Wireless LANs are very similar to Ethernet. As their name implies, they don't have to have a piece of wire there. They are shared media like original Ethernet, thus they're going to be a little bit slower than the wired options. TCP, IP, and the dynamic duo of TCP, IP. These are the most popular protocols today. They're also probably the most confusing protocols because there are so many options going along with them. And they do span both the wide area network and the local area network. So odds are very good that if you're going to be becoming familiar with data communications, you're going to be using TCP and IP together as a protocol pair. The odds are also relatively good that you're going to be using a service called Frame Relay. Frame Relay is primarily a wide area networking service. It's a very popular connection offering today and is a more secure, more inherently secure method, and frankly, a simpler method than doing only an internet-based VPN, or which stands for Virtual Private Network, if what you're looking at is enterprise-wide communications. So with that information as kind of a background to the protocols, let's move forward to looking at what you actually do when you're putting together a data network. By definition, data networks really consist of two types of networks. There are local area networks, or LANs, We show them here by the red cloud and the blue cloud. And then there are wide area networks, or WANs, and we show them here as being the purple cloud and the green cloud. Now, by the way, the reason that we use clouds in data networking is just as a symbol for showing here is a generalized, conceptualized network without having to get into all the specifics of what the actual pieces of equipment are that are in there. So it's a networking function that represents all of the connectivity within a general area. Now, of course, if you're wanting to go from your local area network somewhere outside your local area network, you're going to be connecting to a wide area network. In order to connect to a wide area network, there's a definition called a user-to-network interface, or UNI, that goes between the local area network and the wide area network across some kind of an access line. Now, in this case, we just so happened to show LAN 1 going to WAN 1 and LAN 2 going to WAN 2. LAN 1 and 2 could, of course, both connect into WAN 1. But generally, whenever you have a wide area network connection that's going for a very long distance, it very, very likely is going to involve multiple wide area networks that are in use. For that reason, we have also something else called a network-to-network interface, or NNI. As a user, you will very seldom see the network-to-network interface or even be aware of it, but you do need to know that that exists. Now, let's take these clouds and try to make it just a little more concrete as to what goes on inside each of these clouds. We'll start by talking about Ethernet hubs and switches. Even though the terms are sometimes used almost synonymously, there is a technology difference. An Ethernet hub is a shared media connection. Even though you may have the connections that looks like you have a wire coming from each PC going into your Ethernet hub or switch, if it's a hub, it's going to be shared media inside the Ethernet hub. An Ethernet switch provides switched capabilities. That is, the information, for instance, that is seen by each of the three PCs up at the top of the diagram here will only get to each of those PCs if it is intended for that PC and has that PC's address on it in a switched environment. In a hub environment, everybody sees everything. Obviously, switching adds at least two major capabilities here. Number one, it's more secure because everybody doesn't see everything by default. Number two, you're not using up your transmission bandwidth with information that you don't need to see. Now, very closely related to the Ethernet switches are what's called wireless Ethernet access points. These include some type of 802.11, 802.11b if it is at 11 megabits per second, 802.11g at 54 megabits per second, transceiver to send and receive Ethernet within the local area. The same fundamental capability as an Ethernet switch, except you don't have to have wires. That's why it's wireless, right? So, in reality today, often these two pieces of equipment may even be bundled into one piece of equipment. Very common today to be able to have a wireless Ethernet access point that all, particularly for the small and medium business market, that also includes Ethernet switching capabilities within it. Of course, in order for your Ethernet switch or your wireless Ethernet access point to work, you have to also have those capabilities in the computers. Computers generally use some kind of a network interface card, or NIC, in order to provide connectivity. It can be a wired NIC, in which case you use cabling to go between the NIC and the switch, or it can be a wireless NIC, in which case you have a wireless NIC both in the computer and a wireless NIC in the access point to provide that connectivity. And by the way, a quick clarification, when I mentioned the speeds for 802.11b and 802.11g, those are the maximum speeds. In general, that was what you would get under ideal transmission capabilities. In some cases, particularly as you get farther from the access point, your speeds are going to diminish from those speeds. So far, all we've done is talking about equipment that would be used in the local area network. But most local area networks today also want to get outside the local area to a wide area network. That wide area network could be the internet. It also could be another corporate site. In order to get to the wide area network, you need two additional functions. You need a router. And what this router does is look at the IP addresses for all of the traffic flowing around on the LAN and decide which traffic stays locally and which traffic needs to go across the wide area network to find its ultimate destination. It does this by looking at the IP layer that we were talking about earlier when we were talking about the protocols. Once that decision has been made, your information is still in a digital format. However, a lot of wide area networks also have analog facilities of some sort within that particular network. So you also may need a modem. A modem is a device that converts the digital transmissions to analog so that the information can be carried on an analog phone or on a cable network. In some cases today, when you're using a digital service, such as DSL, or if you're using something called a T1 service, or even a digital 56 or 64 kilobit per second service, you're going to have a device there that does the same function as a modem, but it's called a CSU-DSU. And what the CSU-DSU does is essentially groom the electrical characteristics of this particular traffic so that it's appropriate for transmission across a digital network. Exactly how it does that really isn't of great importance at this particular level. It's just that you have to know that you're going to have some type of equipment there. Very often, by the way, your router today may be integrated with an Ethernet switch and even a wireless access point. In some cases, you'll also have a router with an integral modem for whatever it is that you're using, particularly in the case of cable or DSL modems. Then we have firewalls. Firewalls, as you saw on the previous slide where it said router with firewalls, are hardware or software that prevent unauthorized access to a private network. They're a must-have when you're connecting to the internet because you need to make sure that you're appropriately protecting your resources. The wonderful thing about the internet is that it's wide open and you can connect to anybody. That's also the bad thing about the internet. It's wide open and anybody can connect to you unless you have appropriate safeguards with your firewall. If you're using the internet to build a private virtual network or VPN, then in those particular cases, what you'll be wanting to do is actually to possibly use a VPN appliance, which is a separate piece of hardware, and it's used to provide added security and performance for IP-based wide area networks. Basically, what it is a piece of equipment that can make your life a lot easier than having to try to do all of this in the router or in the switches. So a few final considerations. I'm not going to read the list of questions here to you, but there are a list of questions here that also appear in the printed version of the backgrounder that are things you should be aware of in terms of assessing your network and things that you need to really decide as you're building your network. Things like, how critical is the data network in terms of uptime? What kind of skills do you have in-house? Are you going to basically do everything yourself? Or are you going to look outside for additional help from perhaps a service provider even? Do you have those skills available to do that? Should you put voice onto your data network? Last one I am going to mention very explicitly, though, what's the bottom line return on investment? When you're looking at building a data network, it's mandatory that you keep the business needs in mind and that you build a network that is appropriate for your business needs. And there's no way that we can possibly overstress the importance of network management issues. We need to know how much of your network is self-managed or self-healing. Who can you turn to when you have an immediate need? Are you going to learn this? And personally, are you going to dedicate employee time? how are you going to figure out how to get the network managed? The wonderful part about networking today is that networking can be very, very cost effective. But what you'll find is that you need to make sure you have the personnel issues covered in order to make sure that whatever level of network you're implementing, you have help internally, from your networking equipment suppliers, from your service providers, from perhaps a third party, to make sure that everything keeps running as it should. So thank you very much for spending this time with us. I think we did a reasonable job of talking about protocols, talking about what some of the different parts you need in order to build your network, and looking at a few of the important questions. If you would like to have more detailed information on this, let me certainly encourage you to visit both the Webtorial site and the site for our sponsor for this particular broadcast, Nortel Networks. Thanks again.